The next contribution would be from Tony Joyce.
John Page was one of Eric's oldest and closest friends, and he's extremely upset that he's not able to be present tonight. I knew them both. We were contemporaries at Pembroke College at Cambridge, and John has asked me to read what he would have said had he been here. Eric Mottram and I went to Pembroke College, Cambridge in 1947, shortly after the war. Our group was predominantly a well-travelled group of ex-servicemen, many with experience of the Far East War and its immediate aftermath. Eric had swept mines in the Indian Ocean. I had witnessed the partition of India with its associated ethnic conflicts. Innocently, we were hoping for a new future for the world. However, events were to evolve politically to disappoint us profoundly. The seeds of East-West conflict had been sown. We were students in the age of McCarthyism, conform or rebel and perish. As we cared, we had to value intellectual and political liberty in the face of formidable intolerance. It moulded our characters. I think I first remember Eric from his intense bursting forth of laughter, or his staccato machine gun-like delivery of words, followed by pauses to check whether the verbal message had struck home. If not, then another burst to ensure the verbal target had been hit with accuracy. One's answer had to be sound. I at once recognised a shared dislike of posturing in the name of importance in Eric, and a disciplined mind that could separate falsity and pomposity from true purpose a mile away. Eric attacked people posturing in bogus positions with words combined with laughter. In our hearts, we were both serious people who cared about what we believed to be important. We were young rebels who believed in our causes. The world, however, was to be taken apart kindly. We shared a belief that humour provides a very powerful dissecting knife with which to tease out truth from the confusion of mindlessness and to achieve social progress. It hurts less to do things this way. Our causes were more important to us than the social need to be labelled rebels. As heretics, we were too wise and enjoyed life too much to wish to be burned at the stake. We had seen too many heroes perish. In the years immediately after Cambridge, we had a lengthy correspondence. I kept those letters. The letters start in Switzerland in July 1950, just after I had graduated. They then came from Pembroke College, where Eric continued to study for his PhD. Then there was the move to Zurich, then back to Cambridge in 1953. The letters written in this period were often quite long. I have 58 pages of closely written comment and observation, charting Eric's post-university development over that period. When Eric moved to Singapore, the letters were on air letter forms and shorter. There are 10 air letters from Singapore surviving, plus one long letter about his terrifying political experiences there with the police towards the end of British colonial rule. Then there was correspondence from the happier Groningen period, when a lot of our correspondence was about family and friendship. By that time I was married with children. He was closer to England, and he could come to see us. Art was central to our friendship. I introduced him to photography. He challenged me to reach out towards the avant-garde in literature and philosophy. He was much taken with Jung and Sartre. I took steps to persuade him there was a creative role for technology in society in spite of the atomic catastrophe. So we formed each other's minds interactively. Mutual brain surgery, to borrow an image from Ian Seidelman. And now to read one of Eric's letters, which contains the essential buzz of ideas found in them all. From Pembroke College, Cambridge, January the 31st, 1953. Dear John, I hope you will not think me presumptuous and over-insistent in enclosing the first of Day Lewis's talks. If I can finish it in time, I will enclose the second article. This is just in case you didn't manage to hear them, the talks originally. And I remember you were interested when I mentioned the spring sequence last time we met. I'm not saying I myself approve of all that Day Lewis says, but he can stimulate. I'm up to the neck in work this term and enjoying it immensely. I'm supervising on the 18th century, which I've not taught before. I'm doing an article on Clouzot's film, and I'm working on the early Wordsworth, which I may give to the new research students group which is being founded here, first meeting last night in Girton. And all the rest of the usual Cambridge things which constitute the huge whirl. And into the bargain, I got caught up with Dickens and Santayana, new fields for me, and I haven't really the time for these. It's appalling. On top of this, I've begun going to Dr. Leavis's classes in Downing. This happened almost by accident. An enthusiastic American friend of mine is a pupil of Leavis's, and he invited me to go along to his supervisions on Thursdays. These are run on rather more seminar lines, as it were, than what is usual, but Leavis has too many pupils to do it otherwise. He sits and discusses texts and writers with a charm and fluency which is quite the best I've come across. Here is, for once, a great man at the height of his powers, at work, genuinely giving out his method and opinions. His hour on Blake showed me more about Blake and about those years of 18th century thought than I've gathered from all the books. He makes you feel all your previous work and opinions are peripheral. And John adds, I should mention I often went with Eric to the Fitzwilliam to see the Blake pictures there. Eric was fascinated by the interaction between the visual and poetic in Blake's makeup. This discipline is exactly what I require now. Probably I would not, before, have been fit to receive it. But after 5 years of Cambridge, I've sufficient book experience to benefit from this great teacher. The trouble is that I feel my own supervisions are too puny to be valuable now, and that I'm increasingly using his techniques and arguments. I'm only glad this comes now. During the Tripos, it would have been fatal. I should have thought him arrogant and minor, or at least of relative importance then. I would have been stupid enough to dislike him in my own arrogance. Last Thursday we sat out in the sunshine at Downing. Imagine it in January, sunshine, listening to Leavis on Blake. It seemed so fitting somehow. I shall never forget it. He said we might not have any sun for months and hope we didn't catch a chill. He himself only wears a tie for lectures. Otherwise, he seems to wear the same shirt, jacket, and bags week by week. It's probably a series of shirts all the same. A uniquely thick, off-white, wide-open variety which reveals a mass of matted chest hair. Can you imagine anything more remote from Pembroke, Kings, and the Wim? There's a genial seriousness which I find irresistible about the man. I disliked him before, as I saw him from the lecture platform delivering judgment rather pontifically. No one likes to admit, especially undergraduates, that a man has the right to make judgments after years of practical experience. I'm so exhilarated after an hour that I work like a fiend the rest of the day. Things seem to focus a bit better. The elation will drop, but it's good while it lasts, and I needed something like this. Pictures are good here just now. A large collection of younger painters at Heffer's, a representative and provoking collection. I've met good stuff from persons unknown to me before. I'd like to see more of Terry Frost, James Hull, Jean Melville, R. Weston, catalogue just says R, and Paul Filer. There's stuff by ones we know too, a superb Scott, a fine Lanyon, and one of the best Brian Winters I've seen, Evening Landscape at Gouache. And at the Arts Council, a retrospective show of John Piper, which I've not yet seen. Hope you're thriving. Yours, Eric. And then John just adds that one other thing that he wants to quote is a postcard that he had from Eric, Salzburg, July the 23rd, 1953. This will probably be one of the central experiences of my life. I cannot put it any other way. The combination of the lectures, the professors, the library, and the European community is unique and utterly powerful for good and truth in a way that must be rare at any time. For many people, meeting Eric and being influenced by him was one of the central experiences of their lives. Certainly was for me. The refreshing mélange of laughter and ideas is now lost to me and to us all. I myself will always miss Eric. He was a very great and irreplaceable friend.